Yeah, so I think rather than have us read a dry list of names, we're going to go down the row or aisle of guests and have you each introduce yourself. And rather, we have some of the entries that people sent in, but I would really like to have you each introduce yourself and in just a phrase or two, give us a sense for the slogan you would have Milwaukee spread to the world, if you will. And I know we're putting you on the spot here, but you're on the panel, so that's kind of the part of the deal.
My name's not on here, and I didn't know I was supposed to come prepared with something, so I'm going to borrow something from a friend. And this is actually an old slogan, but I still like it. It's great city on a great lake.
And this is
Laura. Oh, yeah. Yes. And I have to say who I am. So I'm Laura Vanderbilt. I am lead designer at City Milwaukee. Specifically, I work within the city clerk's office for the aldermen. They're our main customers, but then we also do work for the mayor and other departments in the city.
Give her a hand.
Yeah.
My name is Corey Jo Biddle, and I am the executive director for Fuel Milwaukee, a young professionals group here in the city. Woo-hoo. Give me a hand. Okay, my slogan would be fresh water and strong drinks.
Cheers.
Okay, I'm Rich Musin. I'm the chairman, president, and CEO of Badger Meter here in Milwaukee. I am feeling like a stranger in a strange land here. I will remind you that I am a signatory to the 1998 compromise that we made, which allowed Republicans to come to the east side of Milwaukee in exchange for letting Democrats drive through but not stop in River Hills. What am I doing here?
That was worse than my Aaron Rodgers comment at the last one.
What have you gotten me into here? Anyway, so I don't know. I guess not having been prepared for this, I would say that a great slogan would be Milwaukee, it doesn't suck as much as you think, or something like that.
We actually had an entry that, if you're wondering what's on this piece of paper, it's slogans that readers have entered. But there was one that's not on this piece of paper that was... Suck it, Cincinnati. Oh. Yeah.
All right, hello everyone. My name is Steve Kotis, and I help lead the Milwaukee Flag Redesign Initiative. Thank God. And just off the cuff, I would say Milwaukee. Look forward to it.
Hi. I'm Tom Bamberger, and I'm a writer. I'm opposed to slogans.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
That's a pretty good slogan.
That in and of itself is kind of a slogan, though.
It is. Okay.
Thanks for the follow on that one, Tom. My name is Ian Abston. I'm a Milwaukee lover, millennial expert. I'm going to have to back you on all slogans suck unless you're I Heart New York. You're kind of too late to the game, so you got to do something slappy and edgy. So maybe without preparation, not your mom's Milwaukee. I'll go with that. And Rich, you're right. You don't belong here. You don't belong here. Loosen up the tie. Take a button off.
By the way, I want to thank all of you for dressing for the occasion. I personally appreciate that.
Carol, do you have a slogan?
These are my casual clothes.
My slogan is Soft Kitty City. Soft Kitty being like what you tell a child, like touch the kitty soft. And I feel the whole city has that Soft Kitty feeling, like Soft Kitty Airport, Soft Kitty Traffic. That's my slogan.
Meow. And mine is, nobody asked me, but mine is, come to Milwaukee, you'll probably find a parking space.
Or not. We also, just before we get started, we have a lot of people that are have a lot of expertise in branding in the front row, and we'll be calling on them later, but also if the people in the front row or anyone here wants to join in the conversation at any point, just grab the mic and go, okay?
And I really wanted to start with kind of a big picture kind of question, and that is how each of you believes the rest of the world, or at least the rest of the country, sees Milwaukee.
Okay, well, real quick, I used to live in Chicago, and then in my 20s, when I was the millennial's age, but it was a while ago, and it was great, and I had fun. You know, the press of humanity got to be a little bit much after a while, but I moved up here for a job, and I loved how culturally there was everything here that I needed that there was in Chicago, but I could get from one side of the city to the other in half an hour or less. Wow. So that was pretty mind-blowing, but what was I talking about?
I was asking you about how you think the rest of the world sees Milwaukee.
Yes. So when I got here, that was a question that people were asking me. It's like, oh, you're from Chicago. Oh, what do people say about Milwaukee down there? And I'm like, we don't talk about Milwaukee. Should we be? Oh, well, there's a big rivalry. Oh, you know, we don't like Chicago people up here. I said, well, okay, thanks. but I think maybe there's a chip on the shoulder, and maybe there doesn't have to be, because there's certainly been a lot of people I've known from larger cities who will come here and say, wow, this is so nice. I love a lot of the architecture. I love the feel of the city. I love what's going on. You've got a lovely lakefront. There's all kinds of compliments about that. It's just, you know, I don't, from where I came from, there wasn't like a rivalry or discussion about, you know, us versus Milwaukee. So I never really encountered any, I don't know, you know, Milwaukee opinions out there until I got here, and there were plenty. People here wondering what everybody else thought of Milwaukee. So,
how about the rest of you? I mean, do the rest of you ever travel to other places and hear what other people say about Milwaukee?
Sure. I've been in more hotel rooms than the Gideon Bible. So, yeah, I travel a lot. You know, Milwaukee doesn't have an image, really, but, you know, there are about a half a dozen cities in America that have an image. New York, Chicago, New Orleans, Vegas, Nashville, L.A. Beyond that, what's your image of Cleveland, Columbus, Dubuque, South Jesus, Nebraska? You don't have an image, okay? So the bottom line is, instead of agonizing over what our image is and how we portray that image, the answer is, get people to come here and experience this city. It's a pretty damn nice city. And everybody I meet who has been to Milwaukee thinks it's great. Everybody I meet who has never been to Milwaukee doesn't know what to think. So really the answer is we have to get people to come here because this is a great city. Great city to raise a family, great city to have a career, but a lot of people, when you're outside of any city, it's hard to have an image.
You don't think it takes an image to bring people here?
No, I don't think it takes an image to bring people here. What it takes to bring people here is a job or nice cultural assets that they want to come and visit, a summer fest, things like that bring people here. I remember, and now since I skew this room older, okay, I remember in 1978, the Greater Milwaukee Convention and Visitor Bureau paid $150,000 to a consultant to tell them why they were having trouble getting conventions to come to Milwaukee. And the consultant came back and said it was because Milwaukee didn't have an image. And the city's common council voted to reject the consultant's recommendation and decided that the Milwaukee's image from now on would be a beer stein. And that was their solution to the entire problem. They all congratulated themselves and went home very happy, okay? I mean, that's how ridiculous this let's build an image thing is. The answer is find reasons for people to come here. When they come here, find reasons for people to enjoy themselves and see this as in a positive light, and then we will get people to come here. And also, find reasons to keep people from leaving here.
Ian Abston is grabbing the microphone.
I'm going to have to agree.
Oh my God.
And then disagree with the suit over here.
It's our line again.
So I think there are some opportunities to brand yourself. You find similar cities, Minneapolis, Portland, Austin, similar sized cities that have been able to carve out their niche. And they're actually, their slogan was keep Austin weird. And I think Portland stole that. Doesn't matter what your brand is. No one cares about that. No one's wearing it on their shirt. But that was weird. what we just saw on stage here, that was weird. What's your weird? That's what you have to export. What makes you unique? It might not be weird, but what makes you unique as a city? Memphis, other cities, there's bachelor party capitals, there's music capitals. Austin is known for its music and now its tech startup. Portland is its bikeability and transit. So I think what you're seeing from people my age is you have an ability to work from anywhere and they're actually able to customize whatever city they want to go to based on their specific needs. And I think the cities that are doing the best job of attracting young people, because let's face it, if you're, I think the stats are over 30, you're not moving. If you're moving, it's not because that city's cool. You're moving because of a spouse or a job. You're probably moving because of circumstances beyond your control. Under 30, that's where people are moving because they want to go to a cool culture in a cool city. So that's where you're starting to see in the cities that know what they are and know what story they have to tell, that's where they can find the future people that want to live in their city. So I'd have to agree and disagree. We don't have a brand. We haven't quite figured it out. We're not telling the story. When you travel internationally, you're not from Milwaukee, you're from Chicago, just so you don't have to explain I'm from north of Chicago. But there's an opportunity, and I think the big opportunity is we're a brandless city for the most part, and I think that's a big opportunity for us, and there's a lot of people all in the stage, and probably you don't show up to this event because you hate Milwaukee. We're all probably Milwaukee lovers in this room, so we're all probably working on something we're passionate about. It's just bottling up that passion, telling that story, and exporting it to the rest of the world.
Okay, so I would say I agree and disagree, same as Ian. It's a combination of things. Like for me, my experience in Milwaukee is just there's two different realities that I've lived and faced. So I will agree, we don't have a consistent brand that everybody stamped and said, this is Milwaukee. I think we have more of an elevator speech or a series of experiences that people talk about. When I went away to college, it was really my first time out of Milwaukee in the Milwaukee region. People asked me where I was from. They assumed I was from the South because I have two names. And I would say, no, I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And consistently, I would say 80% of the time on college campuses, wherever I went, people would give me a little pause and decide, should I ask her this or not? And if they asked me, the question always was, is black people in Milwaukee? And it kept happening again and again and again. So eventually I asked the people saying it, what makes you think that? Like, why do you think there are no black people in Milwaukee? What did they say? Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there isn't a brand, there is a brand, whatever. If we're not creating the narrative, there is a brand. People do think something about the city. And I agree that it's reversed once they come here and have an experience. And then there's an internal brand issue because you have a lot of people that live here, grew up here, and don't have the experience of coming in this space and graduate from high school like a bat out of hell, want to leave Milwaukee and never come back. So, I mean, I think there's this combination of voices that you hear internally, but by and large, when I started at Fuel, you know, my job was marketing and my job was to scour the internet and find out what the rest of the world was saying about Milwaukee. And there's some obscure blog in Liverpool of this guy that visited here for summer vacation, and his whole summer blog is about how great Milwaukee is. And there were instance after instance after instance like that, from either Maxim or Forbes or Fortune. There's lots of great snippets and sound bites about Milwaukee, but I think the question is, what's the consistent message that we all co-sign with and want to put out there?
Steve, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, I think that's my hesitation to answer was really because I think it's all about perception, right? It's all about who are we speaking to? Where do they come from? What are their experiences? Because there's people that live in Milwaukee that have a great life, and there's people that live in Milwaukee that don't. What I would say is maybe, you know, our slogan is, it's not what you think, whatever that may be, you're not right. Because, yeah, we have kind of this confusion about who we are and what's important, and ultimately, where do we want to go? Who do we want to be? So I think that's really all I have to say about that.
Is there a difference, and maybe this is a question for Tom Bamberger, is there a difference between branding ourselves to the rest of the world and branding ourselves to ourselves?
You know, I used to think, I grew up in the 50s and branding was always a bad thing. You know, you did it to cows or if you were, what I wonder about is, and I've lived in the same place for 30 years, I grew up here, and I think we should stop bullshitting about who we are. There's one thing about Milwaukee that I've always noticed is that, and it's true about the Midwest, is, you know, we're sort of a little less flashy, a little more straightforward, and a little more honest. So I wonder about, say, you know, declaring that Milwaukee's the water city or the water center. The Silicon Valley, you know, they use that. Well, yes, but you know how Silicon Valley started? It's an interesting story. Stanford University stole William Shockley from MIT. He was the co-inventor of the transistor and a Nobel Prize winner. And they took him out there and they said, you bring the 30 smartest people you can find in the whole world and we'll do whatever you need to do to create this knowledge center. And that's what he did. And in one of his first seminars was the guy, Andy Grove, who started Intel and so forth and so on. So I'm always thinking that we're sort of doing it backwards here. We, you know, when it comes to like the water initiative or something, I would like to see us to bring, you know, really do substantive things, do the hard stuff instead of figuring out what, you know, what gloss we can put on it, what story we can tell. The story of great cities tell themselves. You know, when you were talking about New York, all the cities that you mentioned are cities that the people in the cities tell their stories. We don't need a slogan. And so I guess I'm the skeptic here, and I didn't really answer your question. But I'm concerned about this idea. I mean, you know, Milwaukee, you know, we're going to sort of reinvent ourselves with a slogan. I mean, we were the machine shop of the world. We built the Panama Canal with stuff that was made in Milwaukee. And we basically still have the same, you know, industrial structure. The problem isn't we don't have a good slogan. The problem is we have a lousy university, you know, in Milwaukee. We don't have a great university. The cities that are growing in North America in cold climates are... Well, hold on a second. The cities that are growing in North America in cold climates are the ones that have great universities. Madison's growing. And so, I mean, I guess
Madison's growing off our tax dollars.
But there's a company called Epic there.
Yeah, take away Epic and American Family, you know what you have?
Right.
A city of government employees.
Well, okay, let me just say one other thing, just an answer to that. All this idea about the brand, there's a moral dimension to it. You know, a brand is not a person. Now, for the first time in our history, we always used to elect a party or a person to be the president of the United States. Now we have a brand. And the interesting thing about brands is brands don't have any moral, there's no morality to a brand. So if someone like Prince, I don't know if you know this, but Prince, actually, there's a guy named Carl Stubblefeld. Anybody know who he is? Nobody knows who Carl Stubblefeld is? One person. Okay, he was a drummer for James Brown, and he got sick, and he lives in Madison. He got sick, and he had a lot of hospital bills, and Prince paid it so that no one would know about it. You know, the interesting thing about brands is brands will never do that. People do that. And I think people tell the stories of cities, people make the cities, and cities are naturally where people interact and come up with great ideas. I think I'll stop now.
Rich, you look like you had a reaction to that.
Yeah, I do. So first off, I run a company with 1,500 employees and 9 plants in 5 countries around the world. So I'm constantly forcing people to move to Milwaukee and explain to them why this is a great place to come. And once they come here, they love it. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, we have an advantage in the United States that other places of the world don't have, okay? And the advantage we have, and I'm going to use a water analogy here because that's the business I'm in, is that in the United States, talent flows and it pools. What made, forget about Silicon Valley, what made Nashville, Nashville? What made Hollywood, Hollywood? What made Wall Street, Wall Street? Okay? It's the fact that talent flows and talent pools in certain places. And so when somebody says, you know what, I really want to be in the country music business, they make their life in Nashville. They don't make their life in Phoenix. They make their life in Nashville, okay? When somebody wants to really be in the heart of the financial services industry, they go to Wall Street. They don't go to Portland, they go to Wall Street. So to some extent, if you can look at what your city has to offer, if what makes your city strong, and you can show people that this is here and this is where you should go, talent will flow here and it will pool. So since for over 100 years, Milwaukee has been a center for water technology. And this is not something we invented. In 1922, William Bruce wrote The History of Milwaukee, three snoozer volumes that read like a phone book, okay? And I read the damn thing. And in volume two, in the middle of volume two, he has one sentence where he says, the Milwaukee business community, and this is 1922, the Milwaukee business community scoffs at the city's image as a beer town because they know that the pumps and valves produced in Milwaukee process more water in a day than all the beer brewed in a year. They knew almost 100 years ago that we were a water technology town. This is what we were good at. We forgot. We just freaking forgot. And so here we are today with some of the largest, five of the 11 largest water technology companies in the world have major operations in Milwaukee. If you're talking about water meters, heaters, filters, fixtures, pumps, they all come out of this region, okay? Go use the urinal here. The water is being pumped by a Stay-Rite pump made down by Pentair in Delavan. It's being metered by a Badger meter made here in Milwaukee. It's going through a Zurn valve made here in Milwaukee. It's going through a Kohler urinal made in Kohler. It's being cleaned by an Evoqua filter that's made out in Waukesha. And if you do what you're supposed to when you're done, which is what, gentlemen? Wash your freaking hands. You're using hot water made by an A. O. Smith water heater, another Milwaukee company. Go use a urinal and you're using 7 or 8 products made in Milwaukee. We are a center for water technology. We just forgot. And so yes, you can tell the world, and believe me, I travel the world and I am very involved in the world of water technology, and I will admit, it's a small and sad group of people, okay? But we all know, I can go to Paris, I can go to Berlin, I can go to Singapore, and you know what they say? Oh, you're from Milwaukee, that's where all the water technology comes from. They all know. So in that world, in that very small and sad world, Milwaukee is on the map. Why can't we do that with other things? I'll shut up.
The point here is we should not flush away our chances.
There you go. Thank you. Wash your damn hands.
Wow, I'll have what he's having.
I'm sold. I mean, that was from the pulpit. I was just going to ask Ian a quick question. So as far as attracting young workers, aren't we already doing a lot of that pretty well? We've got all of a sudden all of these condos sprung up along Milwaukee River just to the north of the city. When I first moved here in 01, none of those condos were here. And when they first started springing up, we're like, geez, who's living there? I mean, you know, the economy was kind of down, but we're bringing them in. So, are we? Is this a solution in search of a problem, or what do you
find young?
Rich, get off the mic.
No. The reason I say define young is, our region has a net outflow of 20-somethings. We know that more 20-somethings move out of our region than come in, but we have a net inflow of 30-somethings. More people in their 30s come into Milwaukee than go out.
Well, I am thinking of manpower, and I'm...
Those are people that left Milwaukee in their 20s and failed someplace and came back to Milwaukee.
But you know what? I love it, because you know what? Nothing teaches you better than failure, okay? And having raised some 20-somethings, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that they get their asses out of here and sow their wild seeds elsewhere, and when they're ready to be responsible citizens, come on back to Milwaukee and make a career. I think that's not a bad thing. So we do gain on the 30-somethings, and I would rather gain on both. I would love to figure out how to keep the 20-somethings and also gain on the 30-somethings, but let's not beat ourselves up too bad, because when you say young people down on the river, a lot of those are the 30-somethings who are coming back, I think.
So what I'm seeing on our end, the stats are actually We have a negative 9,000 University of Wisconsin students annually between all university leaving, exporting smart graduating talent away. And actually UW-Madison is the number one import of for Google employees because of our work ethic, et cetera. So we're losing our 20-some-year-olds, but actually, that sucks. Would great to figure out a way to keep them here. However, the worst, I'm going to say this with a chip, but the worst thing you can have is someone who was raised in Milwaukee, went to high school, college, never left, and now they're here making worldly decisions as leaders in Milwaukee. The best kind of people in Milwaukee are people that have gone and come back. People hate the streetcar because they've never seen a working streetcar, because they've never been to a city where there's a damn streetcar. So of course they hate the streetcar. So this is why we have, hey, thanks for the claps over there. That's why Milwaukee's so hard to change, because we don't, cities like Chicago, other cities, you're importing a lot of people. We're growing our own here. So the fact that they're leaving, coming back isn't a bad thing. And I've failed many places. I've also failed here, had some successes here. So it's not always a bad thing that you fail and come back here. But a lot, and also your question on a lot of the housing. I think when you look at our stats, Milwaukee as the only area that's growing is, I think, our Latino population. They're skyrocketing, which is bringing the rest of our population up. Otherwise, we're very stagnant, and a lot of those houses are being filled by empty nesters, downsizing and coming back downtown. And we'll see what it's gonna look like as millennials. Right now, we all want our apartments, but then we're gonna want kids, and we're gonna have real problems having kids with the city here, because we haven't figured out our schools. We haven't exactly figured out our, like, how do you raise a kid down here? Where's your nearest playground? Kim, I think there's one in Easttown. I don't know where else you go. So if you want to be a city of the future where you keep and attract your 30-somethings, you got to figure your shit out and be a family-friendly community where you want to raise a family. And we're not that. And we're going to be living out by Rich out in Lake Country. You don't want to do, he drove downtown. He was on the east side for the first time in like 4 years today. I drove with him here. He's angry. He's like my grandma out there. He's got seven cameras on his car to try and parallel park. I don't want to do that.
I don't want to hear about it. This place is great compared to Chicago. It's awesome.
What the hell are they?
It's awesome compared to Chicago.
All right, I hate to go back to the idea of a brand, but Ian, talk about your shirt. I mean, you know, there's a certain amount of branding that we do to ourselves to make us feel better about where we are, is there not?
Well, first of all, I didn't wash this shirt, but I did want to wear it tonight, so I'll share that with you. It's not a clean specimen you're getting. But this is, I think, when you think brand, you think authentic brand. You can't manufacture a brand and have it be a brand. It has to be something that's born within. So a girl in her late 20s created this Milwaukee home, and it worked and it spread. That to me is a brand. Great city by a great lake. That doesn't mean shit. Doesn't make me want to come here. The people locally tell the story, and the people locally are telling this story. So I'd say jump on that, double down, and figure out a way to tell the world.
A t-shirt's a good idea, but how about raising taxes and paying for a great university that creates knowledge that translates into industry? How about raising taxes to fix streets? I mean, I kind of feel like we're talking about t-shirts and instead of, no, but I mean, but if you look at highly functioning cities, they have great universities. That's what attracts smart people to a city. It's not t-shirts.
I would have to agree. And I can tell you that a lot is being done at the city as far as parks for kids, as far as trying to do whatever we can, which, by the way, MPS is kind of its own separate entity. But, you know, right now, with the way the politics are at the state level, the city is hemmed in as far as what it can do tax-wise. I'm sure you all know that. So, but some amazing things are happening even in spite of that. So there's a program called MKE Plays. That's a public-private partnership that the city is going into all these neighborhood playgrounds that do exist and is upgrading them and making them usable for today's kids. And there's also, just as far as bringing new entrepreneurs on board, Alderman Cox is doing a really great job with folks that are already living here in the city and maybe have had a great idea, but just haven't had the training or maybe the little extra financial push that they need to put that idea into action. Those are things that make the city great for the people that live here, whether or not they're the ones starting the business or whether or not they're the ones that want to see an extra restaurant going down the street. So, you know, with very little fanfare and with very little extra funding, there are some great things going on. I just don't know that we as a city trumpet those as well as we should, honestly.
I just wanted to ask you to rephrase the question again. I just make sure I heard it right and so I can answer this here.
Well, so the question I had, and I mean, it was a reference to the T-shirt,
right.
But not the T. I was using the T-shirt as a metaphor, much the way we were using the...
It's a medium.
Right. Like much the way we were using the urinals before as a metaphor here.
Was specifically talking about urinals.
But really, I wondered if there was some... I don't know, some value in portraying Milwaukee to the Milwaukeeans to make people not so much feel better about where they are, but feel invested in where they are.
Right. Okay. So I think that happens in a lot of ways, right? We have sports teams. We have, maybe you get into them or not, travel campaigns. Brands like Milwaukee Home that stem from the community up, right? And I think we tend to talk about brands as like these soulless entities that, we have to pay a bunch of money for and they work for a short amount of time. And ultimately, the best brands do have souls, right? And the best brands and the most effective and clearest brands are the ones that are able to convey exactly what it is that they believe. Why do they exist? Why should anyone care? And I think that's what we struggle with, is that we pinpoint all of these little things about Milwaukee, whether it's brats or it's water or it's beer or it's this or it's that. And all of those things are true and they're great and we should embrace them. But I think we need to look at the city with a big spotlight. We need to really look at everything that makes Milwaukee. And I would say that, if anything, diversity is probably our greatest asset.
Steve, do you want to talk about the flag a little bit? And you've worked on a branding effort.
Why don't you pose a question to me so that I can get a little bit more specific?
What was your goal when you developed the flag, when you designed the flag?
All right, so we need to take a step back and really flags, right? Who gives a shit? Flags actually, they stem from ages and ages and ages of human history. You look back to kingdoms, they would fly into battle and they would have some sort of animal on a banner and they would charge forward, right? That's where it really stems from. And, the interesting thing about flags is that it's like the language of love. It's like mathematics. It's universal. Every single human being on the planet Earth knows what a flag is, okay? So now that we've got that out of the way, when we think about flags, they're specific symbols of pride. They're meant to say, this is where I'm from. This place is not this place. This place is not that place. And so when we look at Milwaukee's flag, again, we have this mass confusion, right? And that's what's on there, is a massly confused collage of symbols from 1955. And that's it. It never was able to grow into the future and thus faded into obscurity. And so I saw an opportunity, because just like we are all here tonight, we all believe Milwaukee's a great city, right? And in turn, I believed that we deserve a great flag. And that flag can be something that we fly proudly, we wear on our T-shirts. It's all about medium. It doesn't matter what the medium is. It's about having a symbol. And symbols symbolize something bigger than what it's actually representing. And I think with the flag, the reason why the winning design won is that people saw a symbol of opportunity, and that is the sun rising over Lake Michigan. It symbolizes a new day. Like, how much more beautiful does that get, right? Sure, there's plenty of other cities on Lake Michigan, but we chose to take that and own it. And I think that's where the real strength is. And, on top of it, it also symbolizes the three rivers. And when we start talking about water, right? Right, Rich? Water?
Right,
it's really what put Milwaukee on the map. I mean, it's what brought the Native Americans here before any settlers. It's what brought settlers here. And then it became, a port, and it became our means of industry. And even today, it's still, you know, now we have all this water technology. Water has always been the lifeblood of Milwaukee, and I think that's something that we just need to embrace and go forward with, so.
And I like it. I hope that it can become the official city flag one day.
Me too.
Let me ask, what has to happen for it to become the official city flag someday?
We need every single person in this room, or rather, everybody that believes we also need a new flag, to reach out to the mayor and their common council member and tell them that you care about this and that they need to take it seriously and sponsor a bill. So we have an alderman that agreed to sponsor a bill, but we need to start getting more aldermen on board, and this political system is, it can be tricky.
Why hasn't that happened yet?
Well, it can be tricky, but another thing that can be tricky is to really get a groundswell of support behind something like that. It's not easy. If there is a groundswell, you will see a lot more representatives take notice and say, oh, hey, I better pay attention to this and attach my name to this ordinance that this other guy has brought forth. There really does need to be an appearance of energy and, you know, people calling on the phone or saying, hey, this is something that this guy, Steve Kotas, he really did a great job. I really like what they came up with a new flag. Could you hop on board and, you know, make sure this ordinance gets brought up in the next council meeting? That's what happens.
100%. So I think there are a couple things. One is that most people already think it is the official flag. Everyone already calls it the new flag. And also, moreover, you know, symbols like this, you know, the I Heart New York symbol, that didn't gain the equity that it has now. It wasn't copied a billion times until it was out for years and years and years. And I think what's interesting about the flag is that, okay, it's been out for 8 months. It's not even a year old, right? We already have a mural at the crux of Harambe and River West. There is a bicycle company here that built a custom bicycle with the flag. We've sold well over 250 flags. You know, it's happening. This groundswell is happening. And part of it is just simply that people already think it is the flag. So, you know, it's kind of working for and against us.
Yeah, well, I'll also point out that there's been a big run on the old flag, too. And we've had calls at the city from flag companies saying, hey, could you send me your flag file, because we've been getting calls and, you know, we want to jump on this, and like, we don't have a file for that flag.
Exactly, and that it really just illustrates the
people
point.
People want to put their arms around that.
Right.
It illustrates the point is that it's so complex that you guys aren't even able to produce it properly. So, I mean, it just...
Does or does not the original Milwaukee flag have a spaceship on it?
No, may I illustrate
please,
for
please,
you?
Please, please do. You must stand.
I feel performance art coming.
Oh, you thought the last performer was awesome.
Dress like a man?
She By the way, this is as good a time as any to remind you, we are taking...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
There it is.
I think it's...
And it's all backwards. That's exactly another problem with the flag.
It's the same sense either way.
All right, so the strange blob in question, you can see on this flag, it's a little bit easier to see. It's actually the Lady of Knowledge, and you see it's printed knowledge right on over there, and she's sort of like thinking.
She's so smart, she's in a spaceship.
And then she's got the light of knowledge burning. She just can use her
hair. I think she's a genie.
So that's what that is.
Also, the Braves are still.
That's the Milwaukee Braves.
I'd like to point out that there's 10 flags there's on the flag.
Is there a urinal on that?
There ought to be.
Or you could line a urinal with it.
The question came up, this is my office's copy. We're using this to create the illustrator file that we need to give to the flag company. Among other copies that we have.
There is really no Illustrator file for this flag.
Well, no, because it was originally a very nicely sketched out drawing by the alderman who
Oh, God.
he got in all the ideas and he said, Josh, I want They sent it to a professional flag company who embroidered a very nice version of it. And then it's just sort of over the years, people take pictures, send to a flag company, they'll do their rendition. So some of the stuff you've seen online is like really poor tracings.
Don't you suspect that the reason people are collecting that flag is the same reason people collect Plan 9 from Outer Space by Ed Wood? Which is generally known as the worst movie ever made, and people want to collect it.
What's the flag on the flag?
So you're talking about...
Oh. I assume I can yell really loud, but I guess not. So you're talking about this one right here, right?
Once again, we've got it backwards.
Supposedly, that the red and white flag with the two stars in the middle was the standard that the troops that went to war in the Civil War from Milwaukee carried. I have found no proof of that online.
Milwaukee Iron Brigade.
Oh, sorry, we have got it backwards again. I have no proof of that. I've seen no proof of that, but that's the story, that it was a Civil War flag.
I believe it's just a military service flag, actually. It's just like a general service flag for the military.
Yeah, Steve might know more than me. He's been into the flag thing. All right, any other questions?
Hey, you want to wrap yourself
before I, yeah, should I just wear it? As an accessory.
Please.
Yeah, we would love to take some questions from the audience at this point.
So, I have sort of a semi-serious question. My personal feeling about branding is that a good brand is the beginning of a good business plan. That a business plan is about delivering value, right? That you can't really just create a symbol. You actually have to deliver on the promise. And that we're a city that is essentially stuck in sort of a post-industrial age, that we really rely as a culture on growth and on innovation. But innovation is essentially about killing jobs. I'm actually about innovation, but there isn't an innovation that doesn't actually cost jobs. And so we need to innovate. We're an industrial city with basically an antiquated workforce. And we have the highest rate of inequity of any city its size in America. So we have real problems in front of us. It's not just a feel-good symbol. We actually have work to do.
Can I comment on that? There's no question that technology is killing a lot of those great manufacturing jobs that we had in Milwaukee. Just as those great manufacturing jobs killed a lot of the great farming jobs that we had, just as those great farming jobs killed a lot of the great fur trapping jobs that we had. So you could argue that maybe we should have still been fur trapping and we should have never moved forward. My reaction to that is, look, you know, we have reinvented ourselves time and time again. Madonna does it all the time. We should be able to reinvent ourselves again. This is a matter of education, moving forward. We still make things in this city. That's a pretty great thing, okay? We don't have people here working on the next Candy Crush, even though the world needs that more than anything else. We have people actually making things, and that's great, okay? And yes, automation is making those jobs change. In the 1980s, 70s and 80s, Badger Meter would hire high school dropouts. We were very proud of the fact that you did not need a high school degree to come to Badger Meter and stand on an assembly line and assemble water meters. Today, that isn't true anymore. Now, you need a high school degree. You need to be able to read the prints, and you need to be able to handle all of that. And frankly, maybe that's not a bad thing, because I don't know one mother in Milwaukee whose dream for her unborn child is that someday he will stand on an assembly line and put together water meters, okay? So now we have people programming CNC machines, driving forklifts, and everything else. So there has been a displacement. There has always been a displacement in society, and the answer in the United States, at least, has always been, let's educate, let's reinvent ourselves, let's prepare our workforce for the new millennium, for the jobs that are out there, for the technology. That's what we need to do. I feel real bad that I don't hire high school dropouts anymore, but it's not my job to create high school dropouts. It's my job to create value for my shareholders. And I do create, my starting jobs are now $15 an hour. My average wage at Badger Meter is about $40,000 a year. Those are pretty good jobs with great benefits. Those are pretty good jobs. But I can't hire people who can't read and write. So we need to solve the education problems.
So Russ, I mean, to that point, unemployment is about 5%, mm-hmm. right? So you're going to create over time more and more efficiency. So what actually happens? So these people that are out of work today, where are they going to work? As you squeeze more and more efficiency, I mean, we're, I think, about 300% as efficient as we were in like 1980, something like that, right? We're going to become more and more efficient. So what does Milwaukee honestly become? That's the I think that's the fundamental question I'm asking. It's like, I think I applaud you as an employer. Fantastic. And it's a short-term idea. You know, we're going to employ more and more people in manufacturing, but you are going to work with your engineers to create more efficiencies, to squeeze more fewer jobs to do the same thing, right? And so ultimately, we have to basically become a city of knowledge workers. We have to be the people in charge of the technology, right? We have to really be thinking about how we educate those of us that are not knowledge workers, those of us that are lining up to be manufacturers or to work in a gas station or whatever. We have to re-educate them to actually become knowledge workers, and we have to become part of the global economy, not simply the local economy.
I mean, it doesn't sound like what the two of you are saying is mutually exclusive here, though.
No, and you know, frankly, I think as we move forward, the people who might be in trouble are the Mexican and Chinese workers who are going to be replaced by automation. I mean, our automation, and as we educate more and more kids to be in CNC operators and to be engineers to program the robots and the conveyor belts and everything, we are going to, and we have seen this, start moving some jobs back to the United States where we can do them efficiently. And it is these third world countries that are completely surviving on the low wage, manual labor type jobs that are going to find themselves challenged. And when you look at it, what the other thing that's happening in China and Mexico is they've got a growing middle class. So the $3 an hour worker in Mexico isn't there anymore. I'm losing them, and I'm having to pay more and more in Mexico. And frankly, I make decisions on a regular basis where produce in Milwaukee, invest in robotics and stuff and produce in Milwaukee and hire 10 people, or produce in Mexico and hire 30 people. Which am I going to do? Well, it's an economic decision. I look at the wages down there. I look at what it'll cost me to do up here. And what I'm finding is what used to always be a no-brainer, go to Mexico, isn't always a no-brainer anymore. I'm finding that there are times when I say, yes, let's do it in Milwaukee. It makes more sense.
Okay, so I'm 22. I go to UWM, and you know, we've been talking about this from an economic standpoint, and I think if you look at it through that lens, branding does kind of have negative connotations. I think we need to take it back to just wanting to give a better personification of our cities to the younger people. It doesn't always have to be about the economics. I think when you just push and show that the city is great for the community aspect, for the culture aspect, then people are going to want to flood in. It doesn't always have to be about money. And that's, I mean, I have no money, so I understand that it doesn't have to be about money.
What, are you hoping to get a job when you graduate?
Yeah, but I mean, I know that my major isn't one of the majors that's going to propel me to become a six-figure kind of person. So I understand that.
But I mean, if there are no jobs in Milwaukee, what are the chances of you? I understand it's not about money, but if there are no jobs in Milwaukee, will you stay here? If you can't get a job at all, are you going to stay here?
If I can't get a job, how am I going to leave?
Absolutely. I mean, well, you're going to go somewhere where you can get a job. Aren't you going to go somewhere where you can get a job? You don't go nowhere. You just stay here and starve. I mean, people go where the jobs are, don't they?
There's a whole side of Milwaukee that is staying here and starving.
You know, well, wouldn't it be great to have jobs for them?
Absolutely.
But and so I, the argument, this isn't about economics.
That's what she's speaking to. As much as, you know, it's nice for us to have this conversation with this group on this side of town that you're not used to being on, but this is pretty luxe, you know, compared to where we could be. And we were talking about branding, and I think, you know, if you read the article, we all got the magazine for free. It's more than just how we talk about ourselves. It's this comprehensive idea of what is our vision for Milwaukee? Who are we really? What are we going to be in 10 years, 15 years? Collectively, what are we saying about ourselves? What is authentic and what is true? And for every, you know, one person that has seen that flag, there are 10 people who heard about the unrest on the north side and, you know, the segregation in the city and the fourth poorest city and, you know, all of these other things, that all of these other voices that are not heard, that don't care about the flag. And they need a job, but it won't. I heard Cece ask you about your credit score. I thought that was hilarious because she has no idea who you are. I know, but there's millions of people in the world who are not in that situation, but they're concentrated in this city in a way that is very unusual. So our diversity is our greatest asset, but some of our most diverse creative people are trapped and pooled in places where there are no jobs and there is no way for them to get out of it. They just sit there and rot.
It does sound like you're saying it's about economic development. It is about the money.
It's about the money. It's about, you know, we can scream from the rooftops about urinals and all that. It's important, but it's about the money in that marketing way as much as it is about face-to-face investing in the other side of town. Real money, real investment.
Right, but the best social program, in my opinion, is a job, okay? And we can scream about urinals, and the guy who gets paid $20 an hour to make the urinals those urinals are very important to him, very important. And you can say that, you know, you won't leave. Well, if you have a $20 an hour job waiting for you in Chicago and can't find a job in Milwaukee, what are you gonna do? You're gonna go to Chicago. I think economic development is a very important issue we have in the city. If the people in the 53206 area code could have the jobs that would allow them to have family supporting jobs and a good lifestyle, it could turn that area around. That's what we need to focus on. We need to focus on creating economic opportunity for these people. So, I understand a lot of other stuff, but that's really important.
That we just get cut off. We got cut off. Okay, they don't like us.
We're loud.
Boy, okay. I agree.
Rich, this is what I would ask you, like, just legit in this room. This is just between us, right?
In the rooms that you're in having these conversations, how many heartfelt expressions of what you just said are said, spoken out loud, with real pen to paper, money on the table, let's do this for real,
I'm so glad you asked that, because I gotta tell you, okay, four decades in this city, I am sick and tired of the assumption that every CEO is some cold-hearted bastard who doesn't care about the city that they live in, okay? I was born and raised in this city. I have 1,500 families depending on the decisions I make every day. And very often, if I make the wrong decision, not tomorrow and not next year, but 5 years from now, a large number of people will lose their jobs for no reason other than I made a bad decision. You wanna talk about stress? You wanna talk about driving to work every day and thinking about that? And if you believe, and there are CEOs, there are bad CEOs out there. I'm the first one to say that. There are bad CEOs out there. But the majority of the CEOs in this city, when you're talking about Todd Teske over at Briggs or Todd Adams over at Rexnord, when you're talking about these CEOs, we think about the families that are affected by our decisions, and we do care. And we care about, and I care about how can I influence the city of Milwaukee to give better training to people so I can create more jobs here. This is what I want. I want to be able to hire good skilled people, and if necessary, I'll hire them and train them, but I want to get them in here. We do care. And the cold-hearted image of the CEO, I think, is very much unfair.
Talk to the people who represent you out in the right country,
though. Well, what are you saying? My representatives in Lake Country don't care?
I think they're part of the problem just as much. If we're going to say that CEOs must be part of the problem, and I'm with you, I don't think that they are. I think that elected leaders from parts of the state that are not Milwaukee are still caught up in that anti-Milwaukee.
Oh, I agree with you. There's an attitude that all this tax money is going into this black hole that is Milwaukee, and that there, and frankly, come on, their elected officials, they're responding to their constituents. And their constituents are saying, why are we sending all this money to Milwaukee? Well, Jesus, Milwaukee is 40% of the population of the state of Wisconsin. Milwaukee is the economic engine of the state of Wisconsin. I don't care if you're in Wausau, Mosinee, or whatever, you should care about Milwaukee. It's very important.
So is this who we need to be, is this who we need to be branding to? Do we need to paint a different picture of Milwaukee to all those people in these other places?
Isn't he good about getting us back to the branding question? Boy, this guy is like a one-note musician here. Okay.
That's why they booked me.
No, I you're probably right. Maybe we do. I guess I hadn't thought about that, but maybe we do.
Who has skin in the game?
Go.
All right. So.
Well, I got skin in the game. 80% of my family's wealth is in Badger Meter, okay? And every financial analyst in the world tells me, you're a fool. You should be selling that stock. You should not have that much of your family's money in one company. And anybody who knows anything about finances means you don't put all your eggs in one basket, unless you're holding the damn basket, okay? But obviously, I put my money where my mouth is. I believe in the future of my company, and I put that money in there. When I get up in the morning, I'm very concerned about the future success of this company, the long-term success of this company, and all of those jobs, and my own personal wealth. That's very important to me. Having skin in the game is important. And by the way, at Badger Meter, we are a very unique company in that we have a bonus program. And the bonus program is based on us achieving some economic goals. And we pay that bonus, okay, to 800 of our 1,500 employees. Basically, anybody who's not paid overtime gets the bonus on the same formula that I do. And so a year ago, zero bonus for the CEO, zero bonus for everybody.
Hey, Rich, let's get a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thanks, so to bring it back to branding a little bit more, when I've got friends who are looking for jobs in other cities, but then they are looking in specific cities that support the lifestyles that they are living. And so when they're looking for jobs, then they're not looking in Milwaukee, they're looking in like Seattle, or they're looking in Portland, or they're looking in San Francisco.
What do you mean by life? What are you driving at in terms of they support the lifestyles that they're living?
That they support the interests that they are interested in. So if they are interested in art and they're not necessarily like interested in working in art, but they want to work somewhere that supports the arts, then they go to Minneapolis. If they like bikes and they like riding around in bikes, then they look for jobs in Portland, and on and on and on. So I feel like that's like jobs are important, obviously, and trying to figure out how to solve the education and the job problem is like definitely a thing, but how do we attract, I guess the whole brand thing is like, who do we want to attract to our city besides people who want jobs? That's, I feel like, what this whole conversation should have been about for a while now. And then the second question, I guess, related to that is that people love beer, they love cheese, and they love sausages. And everybody in Milwaukee hates that that's our brand. So, like, why, what's wrong with that? Why?
Do people hate it?
I mean,
I think we've hated it as a brand for ourselves.
Like, water is really boring. Nobody's gonna come to the city. Nobody's gonna come to the city for water, but they're gonna
try to make a beer without water.
But they'll come here for beer made with good water. Good beer made with good. So I just wonder if that's if we have this brand like in our pockets that we are just ashamed of.